Nuru is the Kiswahili word for light, and it connotes hope. Jake Harriman created the organization at Stanford University, and he says he's just a few years away from being able to definitively demonstrate how to end poverty.
I believe that our civilization is at a crossroads. Either we continue destroying each other, or we make the connection that the only chance we have to see the end of terrorism is to end extreme poverty.
That's Jake Harriman in an online video that introduces the goals of Nuru. In a talk at WVU, Harriman shared lessons he's learned in his campaign to end poverty in the world. But first, let's define the beast.
One of the things that Nuru is trying to do is actually change the whole conversation about extreme poverty. The classic definition, according to the World Bank, is living on less than $1.25 a day. But a lot of my background and experiences that I saw and when I was in combat and the desperation and hopelessness in the eyes of the folks that I was working with and sometimes fighting didn't seem to match up with just that strictly economic definition.
Harriman says his definition of extreme poverty is a condition where people are unable to make meaningful choices to secure their basic human rights. He experienced people stuck in these conditions firsthand when he was a Marine. He says it was one experience in particular at the beginning of the Iraq War that changed his life's trajectory. Now, a warning, this next part gets quite graphic and may not be suitable for children or those with delicate dispositions.
I looked up the main avenue of approach on Highway 7 and I saw a little white car coming toward our position. And I thought, they packed explosives in the car, they're going to try to blow themselves up in our position. So I grabbed a couple of my guys and we took off running toward the car to try to get it to stop, and it wasn't stopping, so I fired a warning shot across the hood of the car. It finally stopped about 50 meters out.
It should be noted here that Harriman and his colleagues hadn't eaten in a couple of days. They were sleep deprived and terrified, common wartime circumstances.
The driver jumped out, started waving his arms frantically and sprinting at us. And I think, okay, this guy's strapped bomb to himself. He's going to try to blow himself up, so I'm yelling at him in Arabic to try to get him on the ground. He's not responding. So I pick up my weapon. I think I'm going to have to take him out. And I look behind him, and I see a large black military truck roll up behind his little white car. And six guys in black ran up to his car and started shooting into his car. And this man stopped dead in his tracks, started screaming, and turned around and started sprinting back to his car. And that's when I realized what was happening. This guy was one of those poor farmers trying to escape across our lines with his family. And so I yelled at my guys to tell them to take the fedayeen out as I sprinted to try to save this guy's family. But by the time I got there, it was too late. His wife was in the passenger side. She'd been shot in the face and in the chest, and she was slumped over dead. And he had a little infant baby girl in the back. Her arm had been shot off, and she'd been shot in the head. She was dead, and then he was cradling the little body of his little six-year-old girl who'd been shot in the stomach, and she was choking on her own blood. And this guy was, beside himself. And I for the first time in the war, everything slowed down for me, and I put myself in this guy's shoes, and I thought, I live in a world of choices. Where do I want to go to school? What do I want to have for breakfast? Where do I want my kids to grow up? What choices did this guy have when he woke up this morning?
Harriman explained that southern Iraq was one of the poorest areas in the world at the time. A lot of hunger, no access to health care, water, or education. The Iraq army and Saddam's special forces, the Fedayeen, were retreating to make a final stand in Baghdad, but stopping in these rural areas along the way, telling impoverished farmers that if they would just fight, their children would be looked after.
It's not fair that the GPS coordinates of this guy's birthplace dictated that he had no choices in this world. And so I thought that maybe I can make even more of an impact on the war on terror myself if I got out and tackle what I believe is the leading contributor to the proliferation of terrorism and insurgency and kind of general global instability, which is extreme poverty. And that kind of led me on this quest.
In his talk at West Virginia University, Harriman outlined key lessons he's learned that guide his efforts in impoverished places, lessons that he says are applicable in all areas stuck in poverty. Harriman primarily stresses the importance of leadership and finding leaders within communities. He says it's fundamental if the end goal is to leave a community able to self-sustain. Harriman says after you determine who within the community is already standing, dedicated and committed to the health and well-being of that community, conversations then have to happen about the specific needs in critical areas: hunger, ability to cope with economic shock, preventable disease and death, and access to quality education. Then, Harriman says, it's time to research best practices to form an integrated approach to provide for those specific needs.
And we work with the local leaders to analyze those different solutions. And we kind of analyze them using three sets of criteria around impact, sustainability, and scalability. And then they choose the solutions that will work best in their communities. So there's a lot of ownership there.
Harriman refers to the final step as the sustainability engine.
You have to put something in place that will ensure that the work that you're doing with the community can last. And so that's where we focus on our leadership program to build capacity in leaders, and on our financial engine where we build a diversified, scalable business to fund the work after we're gone.
He's currently touring the U.S., raising funds and awareness to grow his organization.
We want to open source our model. We want to share it with other organizations and governments and train them how to use it so that we can spread the success of this model and the impact of giving more and more people choices more quickly. You know, I have this crazy urgency that I live with every day. You know, every day I wake up and I see that man's eyes, you know, on Highway 7, and it drives me. You know, every day I get out of bed and I'm like, that has got to stop. There's far too much unnecessary death that I've seen in this world, and we can stop it together, you know.
Harriman says he's seen his model work in countries around the world, and he also believes it could help communities right here in Appalachia pull themselves out of poverty. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.